Pickaxe.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Pitch Please, the show where people who play games pitch ideas to people who make them. This week,
like, maybe the infection spreads back to the planets that you've cleared before. I fucking love this game.
Welcome to Pitch Please.
Oh, no,
my name's Alex. I'm joined by developer Chris from Foggy Box.
All right.
Developer James from Catastrophic Overload.
Yo, yo, yo.
Thomas, the Ideas Engine.
Hey, what up? It's your boy. Back at it again with another podcast. Like and subscribe for more content. Yummy yamma. That's the catchphrase of this.
That's his new catchphrase for 2022. Every episode, he's going to say it. He's going to open with yummy yamma.
Oh, no.
Usually what we do in this show, we'll have someone pitch an idea for a game, right?
Yeah.
2-hour devs. Okay. Usually it's Tom because, let's face it, he plays the most games. You kind of know games more than certainly me, I would say.
What, really?
I think so. I think you've played more games than me. I feel like if we had a game off.
Oh, yeah. You think you know games? Name every game. Let's not do that.
Anyway, the idea is someone comes in and pitches an idea for a game, right? To the devs. And then we spend the rest of the podcast expanding it until we're all happy with to the point where we might give it a go. Right? It sounds all right. It sounds makeable, playable, and sometimes maybe even fun.
Sometimes the ideas start out as total trash, but man, do we keep running up that hill, keep running up that road, keep running up that building until eventually, we've got an idea.
Eventually we get it.
Yimmy yamma.
Understand
it. Yimmy yamma.
Wibbly wop.
So... But this time is a little bit different, right? Because
I'm dry. I ain't got nothing. You got anything?
I got nothing.
Why are we here?
I don't know. I was about to shut the entire thing down. Season three. That was it. It was never going to happen.
With us saying, "Oh, sorry, there isn't one."
However, instead of that, we've got a world exclusive. We've got the first time ever
world premiere.
Isn't every episode a world exclusive?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, we have a world exclusive. Resident dev is going to be pitching to us, right? Chris?
That's not how this works.
Look,
no,
I would agree. It's either that.
No, no,
it's
no.
It's either that or we just end.
Oh, good point.
See you later. Bye, bye everyone.
We need it. We need it.
Chris, please. I'm begging you.
Hello. I feel like you've overhyped it. I've had to delve into the empty cavern of my old Trello board. Where I ideas to be lost for millennia.
So this is one you decided to never make.
We're in the elevator right now, and this is his opening statement.
This is one I was like, oh, that's an idea I liked, and I fleshed out a little bit, and then I was like, oh, I'll make that one day. And then, you know, you have to earn money, so you have to make something that might sell. Or
make something
that you think will sell, won't sell, and then move on to the next thing. And then you just forget about other things.
So is this your passion project that you would make?
I don't have passions.
Is this what it's... if you had a tiny speck of passion, is this what you would put into making?
Yeah, if you only could, and you could make a deal with God, and you could make him trade place. I don't know why. That song is stuck in my head.
What is with the Kate Bush today, Tom?
Stuck in my head.
He just loves the Bush.
Yummy yamma.
This might be the worst long intro to any podcast ever. It's 4.5 minutes in.
We're in the elevator. What's your pitch?
Ding.
Hi guys, I see you got the invitation to come to the elevator today. Thank you for coming.
Claustrophobic.
Yeah, it was a bit shady. You gave it to us on just a napkin scrawled in blood. Why would you? What is going on? Are you okay?
I'm
fine.
Do
you need help?
No, I have an idea.
Oh no!
I'm pressing the emergency button.
Okay, so to start off, it's a strategy.
I hope you like that role play.
It's a hex tile strategy game.
Civ,
based in space.
Civ Beyond Earth.
I would best describe it as like I'm remembering. I'm reading it off my trello board right now. XCOM style, like unit choice. So you build a team up as you deploy on missions.
Okay.
So the procedurally generated solar systems, right? So uh-huh. Every solar system is procedurally generated and you hop from solar system to solar system. It's permadeath. If you die, you die. Like you do in XCOM if you did an IMA run, you swap that character out, they die.
It's a roguelite.
A little bit off, yeah.
Hell yeah.
But the idea is that you're going to planet to wipe out a like an alien sort of parasite kind of thing that was moving from planet to planet.
Okay.
And the way I was like originally, it was like a tug of war where if you lose on a planet, you then have to go back to the planet you were just on, right? Until you push back through. Because they retake over.
Yeah.
So you start off in orbit on your big ship, and then you can choose where you want to drop pod in. Because of the scale of it, it's planetary scale. So it would have to be hexes.
Okay.
And the units would have to be mechs, I think, to make sense in terms of scale if you want like singular units.
So and you're a giant mech landing on a
you control
comparatively
multiple.
Small planet.
What's the game called where you're on a planet?
Dyson Sphere Program.
Planetary Annihilation.
That
no,
one. That's
Planetary
what I said.
Planetary Annihilation.
That's what I said.
So it would have to be hex-based. But the only issue is, and this is the maths issue I warned you about previously, is that there would have to be one pentagon somewhere. That is where I was like, where do I put that pentagon? Is that like...
Wait, what do you mean? It's hex-based.
You can't have a spherical... A sphere made up of hexagons without one pentagon in it. It's
is
mathematically
that the
impossible.
Zone? The starting what's zone is the pentagon.
It's just because it would annoy me that someone. I have to know where I want to put that. Because
can you not? What if you put it on the north and south pole? Can you have two pentagons? What happens if you have two?
Remember, I can't remember the maths. If you can have two,
maybe it's only an uneven. Maybe you have to have three, one, three, or five.
Oh, there you go.
Maybe it's an. If right, you find it, you get a bonus score.
It's purely a visual annoyance that would annoy me.
And that's why you didn't make it.
And that's why I didn't make it. No,
I feel like with the heck with the where does the hexagon go? We're putting the cart before the horse. Let's break it down to let's go back to the start of the basic setup. Right, narratively, you're what you are controlling
mechs.
Giga and you're mechs. Traveling.
Imagine in XCOM, instead of the four people you chose four mechs.
Yes.
Okay.
There you
could name them.
Like that. Like
outfit
that mech
them.
Game.
A bit Pacific Rim.
What was that called? Not Pacific
the
Rim.
One where you're a
what
mech,
am I thinking
you're,
of?
You're a warrior.
No, maybe
it's
like...
It's a mech.
the one called Mech Warrior. No. There was another like turn-based XCOM-y mech game, and it's based on a strategy game. What?
Well,
can't
was,
I remember
the
name of the game.
There was a Mech Warrior game that was turn-based as well. It was like hex turn-based, I think.
Are you thinking of like Warborn? That's a hex-based thing with mechs.
Warborn? Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, Warborn, that's 2D. That's also made in Bristol.
I can't remember the name of the game. Right, so let's say there's seven planets. And I guess, so you start on the, I guess, least infested planet?
I think you'd have to start on you don't even have to be a habitable planet. So you're on a ship. So you go straight to planet number one. So the idea is that you drop down, you can't sort of, so over time you can upgrade your ship to maybe scan a zone and be like, okay, there are enemies there. Do I want to be like three tiles away from them? Okay, that's that. You don't know what's there. Maybe you can then upgrade to maybe identify where you can set a scout beacon down and it pings out and it says, okay, these types of enemies are on this planet. So you can kind of prep in advance, but most of the time you're going in blind. But the main... part of it is that the planet gets a turn.
Oh.
Right.
So...
What do you mean the planet is in the actual planet or the enemy as well?
The actual planet gets a turn.
The planet will remember this.
So,
what does the planet do on its turn?
Okay,
besides rotate.
Planets famously one rotate. So every turn, it would rotate by one. But that obviously, depending on what planet you're on, might just be day and night. But you might have a disadvantage at night. They might get stronger at night. You might have a disadvantage. Mm. They might have a disadvantage during the day. So you can try and kite them around to the day side. Maybe they get a buff, or maybe they don't.
Like vampires.
Okay,
but that also changes based on obviously what planet you're on. If it's like a planet with heavy volcanic activity, maybe the planet on the planet's turn, there's a chance volcanoes will go off and do an area of effect, which you could use to your advantage or could be used against you. Maybe you can then get like a heat resistance thing. Maybe you can this, that, and the other.
Okay. Well, I guess also if like the orbital rotation of these planets also have some effect, like maybe one goes in front of the sun for a period of time that blocks out all light to the one behind it. Maybe that planet is then in eternal darkness until the other planet moves out of the way or something.
So this is why I like the idea of generating the solar systems, because you can use actual science to try and make them like cool. So if you take a planet like Proxima Centauri B, which is
my favorite,
which is a tidally
now
locked,
we're talking.
Planet about 1.2 times the size of Earth, orbits around our closest neighbor, Proxima Centauri. It's a tidally locked planet, which means one side is always in day, one side is always in night.
I know this one. This actually is my favorite planet.
Where were you 2 seconds ago? So that would you would be able to create planets like that. But there are planets, because that's like quite close to the sun, it obviously has a temperature that's habitable. But you do get planets which are further out, which could be tidally locked, which means that one side's completely frozen and one side's like, you know, volcanoes because of the heat from the sun. There's no water in it. And there's like a strip around where the night and day meet, which could be habitable. So there are different biomes within that. And depending on where you are.
So the Dyson Sphere program, which I mentioned earlier, does kind of mess with this idea as well. It uses these ideas as well, where it's a Factorio-like, where you're building these factories. And obviously, if you manage to find a tidally locked planet, then you know, I won't build solar panels on the other side because it never spins. It will never get to that side. Whereas if you have naturally rotating planets, then sometimes the positioning of solar panels mainly changes drastically because of what area gets the most sun in a game like that. I mean, they've managed to turn that into a game mechanic. And I guess if we have monsters that are stronger at night, for example, or maybe it gives you more stealth or you know, something like that, less vision and whatever else, I think that could be a thing that is usable. It's just a question of how do we make random gen interesting solar systems every time so it's not ridiculous. Like, oh, this every solar system has a tidally locked planet?
No, there are a lot of choices you could do. Like some planets could literally just be habitable, and maybe the planet's turn is that there are, you know, fauna there that could attack both sides.
Or weather events or things like that.
Yeah, or just weather events. Like
talking about weather events and fauna and things, this is what's making me, because when you started talking about planets and the tidally locked thing and all the different possible features, my head then went to, I know this is like not scientific and this is a big leap, but my head then went to Outer Wilds. In like the incredible like diversity of the planets that you're going to makes it so exciting when you see, you know, some of these new planets that have all these really bizarre, like crazy features about them.
Or like the Hourglass Twins or whatever they were called.
Yeah, and so maybe it's not, you know, as perfectly, as individually crafted as that, but could there be something like...
You could do a mixture.
Yeah, like something that is like a little bit more... science fiction-y in terms of the things that are included in the world.
Yeah.
Like certain kinds of fauna or like certain weather conditions or just like weird things that might happen to the planet that wouldn't necessarily be rooted in science.
I think actually before, what is the scale people are imagining here? Because for some reason in my head, obviously I'm imagining planets that are, you know, these are gigamechs against giant aliens in my head. So the maps you land on
look at planetary annihilation.
Huge. Planetary annihilation. Yeah. Well, I was imagining
that
like
kind of size, I would say
40, 50 tiles, and that's the entire planet, like rotation round.
Right.
You know, not massive. So, you can see the entire combat happening from, you know, light years away, I guess. Like, it's huge, the mechs I'm imagining. Because I guess you can't have, obviously, real scale maps, you know. That's nuts.
No, there would have to be a what's the term I'm searching for? You know, not, you'd have to imagine that, yeah, okay, that guy's that big. Yeah, the
scale?
Proportions are going to be off. Like,
yeah.
I imagine in my head it was like Pacific Rim style.
Okay.
And maybe there are some creatures who are also that big, but then there's lots of, there'd be like a swarm type, which would just sit on one tile, but would represent multiple like creatures.
I guess Into the Breach as well did the same thing.
Do you have to have the whole planet? Is that really key to the mechanic, or can you just have, say, a continent of the planet and have the tiles be like, you could have multiple levels, for example, or multiple encounters on a planet, and you kind of spin round to those locations, and then you only need, you don't have to see. I'm trying to imagine how the combat works. If you have the entire planet, do you just, can you orbit around the whole planet? And that's kind of,
so in my head, you could orbit around the planet because you could choose to drop people off on different sides. Where you could
That'd
have like
cool.
a scout mech who, you know, has a long distance move, has a higher stealth, maybe does like at night is basically invisible. And then you could have like a support guy. In my notes, I've got like support can change turn order, and that's like their main abilities that they can. If you choose an attack and you see that big guy's going to go next, maybe you could change the turn order, but he has very low health and stuff like that.
So are you seeing each individual, what like planet that you land on as basically the equivalent of it, like an XCOM level? If this was similar to XCOM in that combat style, the map would be a planet.
Yes, for anyone who does want a sense of scale, again, Google Planetary Annihilation. The first pictures that come
that
up.
That game looks awesome. How have I not seen this game?
Yeah, I've not seen that. That is cool.
Like, the scale of that, imagine like just, it's kind of like Google Earth. Like if you zoom out to where the sort of world fills your screen a little bit,
You just
spin around. Like,
I just opened Google Earth and I'm zoomed in really close.
Right. Zoom out a little bit.
Zoom out.
You would see your mechs coming over the horizon as you sort of spin the world around.
So it's less of a like a war map, like, you know, counters representing things. It's actually the action. It's like the Giga mech is that size, and the aliens that are on that planet are also of an equivalent size.
Yeah, I think there was obviously going to be some like proportion and like fuckery.
Having them be giant is fine. The thing that's coming to mind though is the deploying of said Giga mechs around. So you're in your ship, right? And your ship is responsible for deploying all of your mechs. Do you have to work with the like orbit of the planet in order to deploy, or can you just go to a place and go drop here? Bloop,
in the deployment drop here, phase, it probably wouldn't be like turn-based or that. You would just go bing, 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 and it would like go.
Okay, that's cool.
And just deploy them at the start, because I think otherwise, that's where science becomes less fun.
I guess you could also like, depending on the if the mission is, I guess the primary mission is, you know, to eliminate the hive. I suppose
it's like a
from
purge,
the planet.
Essentially, you're trying to purge every planet of this disease.
I guess you could say like the hive has damaged the ground around here. You can't land here because the ground will fracture and destroy the planet or whatever. So you can't land right next to the hive or whatever.
Yeah.
So I guess you could limit it that way. And same thing is like you can't land in oceans maybe or whatever else.
The Giga mechs aren't waterproof. Oh my God. Can you imagine?
No, it's just he has a giant raft and a paddle.
Maybe you can land there, but you're mega slow or something. But I guess also if you're seeing the entire combat on a globe that you are able to spin around and all of this stuff, I guess certain weaponry and line of sight is a thing as well. Like if you're using Gauss weaponry that fires in a straight line, you can't hit something the other side of the planet. But if you have rockets or something like that, they can arc around and hit something on the other side.
Yeah.
That actually reminds me of a note. Let me just get it. Hang on. There was a part where once it becomes turn-based, you can maneuver your ship. It takes turns, but they can do attacks from the main ship, which would be
orbital attacks, but
its turn moves. So if the planet is rotating like faster than the ship can move, you can just go around the other way and try and like meet in the middle.
That's cool. Oh, so if like almost like an airstrike for like 10 turns or whatever,
yeah,
you're like, okay, great, I've finally charged the ship. This combat is not going well. I'll just I'll just glass the entire planet.
Yeah, it would damage your own mechs if you can't get them out of there. It's like a Hail Mary suicide because you want to make sure you can't that this enemy doesn't spread.
Maybe that takes a long time to charge between, like, use it once on a planet and then you can't use it again for like.
But you could have a resource. Three or four encounters. There could be a resource on that planet that you can, like, a collectible you walk into and it's like, you gained. Go fuck 'em upium. And it's like, fuck
you
upium.
Battery. Just love one small AA battery.
Yeah, it's a Duracell.
What happens if you fail that, basically? Is the planet essentially or can you get to a point where the planet is actually just destroyed? Like, it just crumbles and you've completely just, like, it's been taken over. Like, is that what this alien life form is doing? Is it just, like, eating the planet, basically, and you have to stop it? And if you don't, the planet is just fucked and dead, and then you're done with that planet.
I'm trying to think of a good visual representation that we... the Guardians of the Galaxy 2, do you know when his little fucking little seed starts spreading out? Yeah. Imagine, like, that kind of spread, but it's the swarms of aliens instead.
Mm. Okay. So you start on one planet, and I guess for the purpose of the difficulty curve of the game just says, right, this planet number one, this is the easiest planet, the least infested planet. Are you then able to choose any of the other planets to go to, or does it literally just say, right, this is the nearest planet, planet number two, the second least infested, and you progress that way, or do you have option to choose?
I think you should.
Like zones, maybe?
I think the best option would be to let people choose, but they have to either, maybe not all of them are habitable. Like, maybe there are bits where this planet is literally isn't habited by anyone, and the aliens aren't at a high enough level to be able to resist cold or something, right? So they don't go there. Maybe you can go back.
Oh, the aliens level up over time as well.
So that's the other thing, is that, so you can and they can.
Right. Mm. Okay. Okay.
James.
Awesome.
What comes to mind is Star Fox 2. Did anybody play that? They released it on...
the one that was only on, like, the re-release of the SNES.
Nintendo Switch Online.
Oh, right, yeah.
I think it might have some elements that are quite like this. So you have Earth, and then you have... Well, you don't have Earth,
really?
You have whatever.
It's a really good
Nintendo's Corneria.
It's Corneria, and then the bad guy whose name I forget, Andross. Thank you.
Andross's enemy is my enemy. How do you forget this?
I don't know. It's the pressure, Tom. No, you're flying... So you get to choose... you fly out into the solar system, and you get to choose planets, much like the first... game. But in the second one, there's also like other encounters. You can just fly around between planets. You have fuel and loads of like resources like that, but it has that element of tug of war. It's like you lose a planet, you have to go fly back and do the encounter again, and
really?
Then try and make your way to Andross's
awesome.
Base. Yeah, I had a great time playing it. I would highly recommend it. But I'm having this Are we set in just one solar system? I may have missed when you were describing at the beginning. Like, if it's one solar system,
what is the full campaign? Like, what is an entire game of this?
Oh, Jesus Christ! Because I don't have this in my notes, but I would say
Andross.
Like, you would, I don't know, in your local cluster.
Right. Okay. So, you save one solar system, you move on to the next.
Is it like Mass Effect?
Maybe it's just endless. It's just how long can you go? I don't know. That's why I don't make roguelikes.
Right. Okay.
Ah, I see.
Hello, I'm Wheels, the Dungeon Master for Storybreakers. Love Critical Role and movies like Hot Fuzz and Spotlight? Actual play series Storybreakers combines the fantasy adventure of Dungeons & Dragons with small-town comedy and mystery in an episodic tale of journalists on the hunt for the secret underbelly of a tiny town where nothing seems to happen.
But excuse me if I don't think a bunch of ragtag journalists from a podunk town are actually going to be of any help.
But technically I don't come from here.
When the mysterious arrival of a celebrity from the Heroes and Adventurers Guild sets off a strange conspiracy, the group will have to leave what they think they know about the world at the door if they're ever to unravel the truth at the heart of this seemingly nondescript town.
It's not front page of the Sasai Star News.
I pulled up the today's like installment of the news to see what the front page actually is.
There's a big picture of a pumpkin that's been stepped on, and it says, "Outrage as pumpkin stepped on."
Storybreaker Season 1 in its entirety is available for listening right now, wherever you get your podcasts, with Season 2 on the way. Find out more at dicebreaker.com.
Does it have to be a what element of this is roguelike? What I don't quite understand.
Well, if everyone dies, you can't carry on.
Well, so is it it's roguelike? It's literally just you don't come back with anything. You're just starting from zero.
That's
each time.
That is, yeah, not roguelike.
That's the like.
I almost mixed up the definitions there in my own head.
So if a mech dies on a planet, they die in real life.
So don't name them after real people.
They don't get picked up after, and you lose them. Therefore, you have to either recruit, or like you have to spend resources to build a new one, which might take time. So you have to send like a team of three into the next planet.
Okay, we need to talk resources.
Okay,
you're talking about resources. How are you accruing these things? Is it literally just loot drops at the end of the battle, or, and I need the correct answer on this one, are you able to develop the planets after you've captured them?
I mean, that
you know what he wants.
It isn't in my notes. But control C, control V, that belongs to me.
I'm okay with this as long as I get to play it.
I feel like
that's cool. The reward for holding a planet, right? Is that you can mine the resources or you have
now,
assets
that's the thing.
By maintaining ownership of it.
Planets or the next level, you're like, right, we've got the fuel to jump to this or this. This one, heavily infested, massive mineral reserves. Mm. This one, lightly infested, but it's arid. It's a bit shit. But,
exactly.
It's still a strategic resource, I suppose. Mm. And that's where you can then choose. Do I take the harder battle and take on this mineral deposit rich gold mine or take the easy route and don't care about it? And I guess if you don't choose the other planet, it dies
You glass the planet. Like being able to destroy these planets totally means that you can't, like you can't gain the resources. Like you've eliminated the threat from the planet, but the planet doesn't exist anymore. So you can't get the resources to then go and fight further threat.
It then builds up to a point where that becomes another fully infested foothold for the enemy. And then later down the line, you're like, well, shit, I know that heavily infested planet is just one jump away from going to my home world. Mm. And that would be devastating. Like maybe the infection spreads back to the planets that you've cleared before. I fucking love this game.
I forgot to mention completely that... The enemy is kind of like the Flood. In fact, it takes people over. When you lose your mech, you might fight against them again at one point.
That's great.
It's a zombie mech.
And I liked the idea of...
The rise of the Giga
the
mech.
Planet, but then, do you know, like in Fallout 4, even though it was very disappointing, where you'd have settlements and then they would get attacked and you'd have to go back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think that should be a thing as well.
So are they,
where you
are
could
they,
lose that planet again.
Are the Giga mechs piloted by humans or are they like alive?
No,
are they like Evangelions or are they like...
Biomechs, Bio-Gigamechs.
Sure, fuck it, why not?
No, but I'm cool with them being piloted by humans.
I just had the word mechs.
Does the human get possessed and then they...
You could just shove the word bio in front of it and it sounds cool still. Maybe that's how they can get... that's how they can get taken over by parasites, is that they're biomechs. So they're like... It's a bit like, they look like a giant version of the Crisis suit.
Battletech. That's what it was called.
Isn't that a MechWarrior thing?
Isn't that part of the MechWarrior world?
I feel like it might be.
But in this, which is very heavily XCOM-style combat, mechs, you have to monitor the heat of the mech. If you overheat, then you start taking damage. Yeah. So you would do quicker
on the hot side of a planet, Tom.
On the hot side of a planet, or you jump into the ocean and that cools you down.
Or go to the cold side.
This is Battletech stuff. But the way that the character progression works in that is the mechs themselves are fully customizable. Like you can say, well, I want all these different types of weapons on them. I want three weapons on this arm, four weapons on this arm, some weapons on their legs. Fuck it, why not? But they are piloted by a captain. So if the mech dies, there's a chance the captain survives. And he has a certain series of skills as well that you can then transfer him into a new mech. And it's not so much of a devastating loss. So that's how Battletech does it. God, I'm so glad I remember the name of it.
I think I've got the name of this game, though. I think it's MechCom. Surely, you know. Unless I'm sure Chris has got one.
No, I don't.
Hey, we're flipping roles in this episode.
Okay. All right. So, in terms of the actual mechs, then, is that like maybe they're not piloted by humans? They are biomechs. Is there some way that, like, is there potential that, like, you can lose the mech but you can somehow retain some kind of data or information from it. One of the great things about XCOM is that you have, you know, like you have a character, you have someone that is with you all the way through until they're not, until they die. And that's such a big thing.
Yeah, but that's what would happen with the mechs. You would get them back. You get them back. But if you lose one down there, they're lost.
Mm.
But then you're like, oh, I miss the mech Gary. And then one day Gary will turn up
Gary
on the planet
Mark
infested. And you'll be like, oh, I have to kill Gary now.
I've got to fight Gary.
It'd be cool if the battle scars remained. Like if we put a lot of effort into, say, like texturing and stuff. And if they get they lose an arm or they get bashed up, you know, that scar carries through the game.
I guess,
that would be awesome.
Whatever you start with are just these default company assigned mechs, right? Military assigned mechs. But then dependent on the resource that you're gathering, and you're like, right, okay, we can rebuild that arm. It's going to cost a lot, but okay, luckily we're mining tons of titanium from this system. It comes back with a titanium arm. And it's like, okay, cool. I mean, that's a scar and a symbol on there of that time when that mech lost his arm. We replaced it with titanium from this cluster over here somewhere. But I guess it's just a question of what is the full campaign. I mean, you could probably spread out and say, yeah, this system has 10 planets and you have to take down all 10 and rid the alien threat from the system, and then game over, you win. Or it's grander than that and it's a cluster of systems. Maybe at the center is a black hole and the alien threat is moving ever closer to the black hole and you need to stop that. I don't know.
But that's why I think the roguelike element doesn't really make sense in terms of the core experience of the game, because it feels like that's just playing like Iron Man, XCOM, right?
Yeah.
The actual game itself, what I was thinking is the having the turn-based combat on the planets and that mechanic of the rotation of the planet having a turn is really, really cool. And that's kind of I feel like that's obviously the selling point, right? That's the unique mechanic. But then what if XCOM has a step back from that as well, right? So in between levels you have that, what's it called, the counter, the big counter that you're then
the
working
avatar
on. So
project.
It's like
the, how did you forget
the
that?
Avatar
We've mentioned
project.
It in every episode.
Yeah. So is there something that's an equivalent of that in it? Because I feel like just using that format could totally work here, to have something that's the equivalent of that. So yeah, within each map, the planet is taking a turn, but in between that, the universe, the black hole or whatever is taking a turn
I think it's just the 100% controlled planet at the very, very end, closest to the sun or whatever, that spreads beyond. Like when you finish a planet, the aliens have their turn and it's like, great, this planet is now more infested, or this one is less or whatever. Like you can see the effects of stuff that you don't take over or don't fight. And that's where, the choices of, do I go back and take back this planet because it's getting pretty nasty?
Cosmic chess.
And I think that's what the alien turn could be if it was compressed to just this one solar system.
I must say, I'm much more in favor of more of the planets are very scripted and designed over the randomization element. But, it could go either way. But having very, defined planets, and you spend a lot of time crafting the environment, the different effects that planet has, I don't know, that is more appealing to me, but that's just, I can say.
Well, no, that appeals to me more as well. When I originally came up with this idea, it was back when Xbox Game Pass was becoming a thing, and all of a sudden, every dev was worried about, we need to make games that last a long time and have a lot of replayability.
Yeah.
I was like, make a
I mean, don't ask me, obviously, because it's not a business sense decision. I'm just like, no, I want pretty planets.
No, but that's why I did it, because I was like, it's got to be a roguelike.
Yeah.
But now I just don't care.
I guess, even XCOM with its grander scale, and even the missions that you know are coming up, like the Black Site mission very early on in the game, is still a randomized level.
Yeah.
So, I think in terms of building it, because at risk of defining a roguelike again, a roguelike is a roguelike when you can infinitely replay it and expect different results every single time. And that's where I think you need to have the randomly generated planets each time, because you want to jump into a new game and not know, I know this is a sand planet, and I know that if I jump right here, the volcano will erupt in 3 turns or whatever. like playing it multiple times through doesn't give you a strategic edge because you've played it multiple times. It gives you a strategic edge because you know what the game is going to do. And
yeah,
you don't want that. You don't want to predict what the game is going to do to you.
Yeah, but also you do get play style differences per run where you could, you know, drop pod all of your mechs together or go, okay, I'm going to send, okay, this time I'm going to send one out on the other side of the planet who's a scout. He's got low health but fast move and can, you know, the fog of war stays faded where he's been or some shit like that, whatever you want to.
But at the same time, if it's not randomly generated, you don't games, you won't need the scouts because you know what's there.
Well, you could do like Rust where it's procedurally generated, but there are monuments that are always going to be there.
Oh, yeah.
They're just in different places.
Well, and then surely, you know, starting position could change. Maybe the home world planet is different each run where you start, or the actual position of the enemies could be different each time you start, you know, the planets that they've infested to begin with, but maybe that's not enough. Resources could be spread differently. You know, it might not be a given that a desert planet's got loads of cobalt or whatever.
In this, if there's limited random, then eventually there would be a correct path through the game. Like, pick this planet because then the monster will do this. Go land on this spot and shoot this way, like in two turns, and you know, the enemy will die. And there'll be a correct path. I guess you could say, oh, but random chance to miss. But like, that's not enough random, you know?
Yeah, it's not fulfilling.
I guess you could say, like, you know, you're guaranteed to have a desert planet, you're guaranteed to have a snow planet, you're guaranteed to have a completely ocean planet or a tidally locked planet or whatever in every single generation. And I mean, that saves you from loading into a game and you're like, fuck, everything is magma. So I think it needs it. But you know, within reason of the difficulty curve of the game. But that's my opinion. There you go. Shit on that.
I guess, yeah. I suppose, like, whether or not it's a roguelike, I want to feel like, I don't know if it's because I've just played a lot of roguelikes recently, but I feel like I have become more and more aware of like the procedural generation in certain games. And that for me just suddenly, like, it's really hard to do. I find it really hard to do well these recently just because there's so much of it that I think audiences are like really acutely aware of when, you know, of the building blocks of how things fit together, more so than they were, you know, a few years ago, 5-6 years ago, whatever, when roguelikes weren't such a big thing. I think last year especially, we've seen so many roguelikes and roguelites in so many different combinations of different genres that I just feel like it's difficult to do well now because it's been done so many times recently. But
I guess it's also, it is kind of dependent on the scale that you build this thing. Like, if you are having a actual massive planet that is, you know, 200, 500 tiles across the entire thing, I don't know how that scales across a sphere, you know, you are going to have more assets and building blocks in there to say this is the city tile and this is rivers and mountains and all of these things. If you scale it down a ton, you don't need all of that stuff. They would literally just be textures painted on there because they're nothing to your, you know, skyscraper gigamechs. So it would literally just be landscape and here's a mountain, here's a ocean tile and all of that stuff. I guess in the same scale as like Civ, I suppose, where, yeah, I mean, it's kind of random gen the way they're built together, but they work well enough for the purpose of this zoomed out world. Maybe it's like that.
I mean, if it's heavily stylized as well, you could get away with a lot more as well, you know, designing tiles that fit together and having your world look a bit more like something like For the King or something where it's just all kind of pieced together. And
for some reason, I've been playing quite a lot of World of Myth recently and I'm thinking of that sort of thing as well, which does the same thing with the infestation of the tiles that spread out as you progress through your journey. I love this game.
We got Game of the Year already.
I genuinely really want to play this game. I'm just imagining like landing on a planet and you see the enemy on the other side, or you reveal the enemy on the other side. And you're like, well, shit, I wish I hadn't landed here. And I've got my sniper who can only shoot in straight lines. There's no way he can hit him. But luckily, my rocket mech can fire over the mountain, hit them three times, shred their armor.
You're right. It does need to have that element, doesn't it? That would just make it so much better. Okay, right. So before we finish off, what about the one other thing that comes to mind is the in XCOM. I know I'm constantly drawing comparisons to XCOM just because that's in my head now. But like outside of the maps, right? You also have the base which you're upgrading and stuff. How is that working in this? You're getting resources. Do you have a central ship that you're using?
Presumably, the ship is it. There's only one,
and
right?
You're like upgrading modules, upgrading.
Oh, see, I was imagining a completely separate metagame outside of all of this, where the planet you take over, the first planet you take over, becomes inhabited by the humans or whatever else, and you can build factories and stuff on there.
Sure.
And over time, it develops to this home world. And then you take over the next planet, you're like, great, I've got the resources to start building this up. I can put mining rigs here, I can put everything else here, and I'm generating all these resources. The more you do, the more, I guess, attractive it makes these planets to the aliens. So,
like Factorio and the pollution.
It's like a risk factor. Right, okay.
But the more you build and the bigger defense that you can build against these things, you can then start cornering your little area of the solar system. Maybe you can start building, I don't know, orbital lasers or something. So if anything starts heading towards that planet, it immediately fires down on it at the cost of resources or energy or whatever. If you have an abundance of energy, that's how you upgrade your mechs. Or abundance of resources, you upgrade your mechs, you upgrade your ship before you even land on it. That's how you can then get the scouting radar or whatever when you go near a planet. Or that's how you build the orbital laser. So after 10 turns of combat, that's how you fire it down or whatever. I guess it's just a question of if you don't like this, not factory building element of it, but city building on this planet. I think I need to play Planetary Annihilation.
Okay, so whether it's building on planet side or whether you do have a ship base or whatever, I think actually the more you talk about it, the planetary stuff sounds really cool. But I feel like it probably would need to be kind of a simplified version of that style of like... It wouldn't be...
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you could just have... This is the tile with ore on it. You just slap a mining rig on there. Maybe depending on how you approach the combat on the planet, if you send in a load of explosive mechs, you could tear this planet to shreds. And you're like, well, I fought tooth and nail to win this planet, but I destroyed it in the process. Like, it's now unusable as a factory hub for my system.
Degree.
Like... That's how you can then strategize with the way you actually combat these things on the planets you land on. And if you manage to clear a system by just destroying, or clear a planet just by destroying the aliens and nothing else, great. You've just obtained yourself a really good foothold to build a new system and ferry new resources forward. And then when you wipe out and die, you start again because holy shit, did you have a great time playing this fucking awesome game.
Why
you make this? Who cares about where the Pentagon's going to be? Just start at the top.
I do. The minigame is find the Pentagon. I've hidden it somewhere.
All right. What is this game to you right now? What
fucking
do we have?
Incredible is what it is. It's an XCOM-esque roguelike gigamech attack force against the alien threat on a... I'm imagining a single solar system at the moment where you arrive in this alien-infested planet, solar system, land on planet number one, take out the small threat in a tutorial mission, and then start developing your foothold in the defense and elimination of the alien threat. You then decide, right, I've got the jump distance to move planet one to. One's got greater resources, higher threat. One's got shitty resources, minor threat. But... you know, you make that choice. And as you progress and as you develop your foothold in the solar system, you become the scourge of the alien kind. Oh, my God. And as you progress, you finally get into the motherland and destroy them there. Not Russia. A different
motherland.
I was
just going to elaborate on that idea that Tom just said, which is maybe where you have to gather enough resources to, like, for fuel to warp to another solar system. And it's basically the game is how many solar systems can you clear? But obviously you take your upgrades with you and you take a certain amount of things with you and you're kind of starting a run again, but with the stuff you've had previously already there. And that's where it steps
Chris,
up the difficulty.
I think Tom just can came. Only get so erect.
Oh, right.
You're going to have to stop.
Jesus Christ. That's so good. Because I was thinking earlier when you were talking about replacing arms with different metals and whatever else, like having legacy mechs that you can just bring into future games. You're like, you know what? I'll start this game. It'll be a little bit easier because I've got this leveled up mech with weapons and whatever else, but very I love this legacy mech. Bring him into the next campaign. And maybe that then scales the difficulty because of the, I mean, at risk of saying Dungeons and Dragons terms, it raises the combat rating of the stuff you're against because the combat rating of your stuff is so much higher. And if you, you know, you progress, you're onto campaign 5, it means not much really, but you're bringing these characters with their little stories and the histories they have. And then suddenly you lose the guy that you had from campaign number 1. That sucks. That really sucks. But that's the story of the game. Is there a lose condition? I guess the ship itself gets attacked and destroyed. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say
you
that
destroy every planet.
The lose condition would be your main ship getting attacked, which would only sort of be caused by. So, say if you want to make a new mech, it would take X amount of days, like a turn-based days thing. But obviously, whilst you're not attacking aliens, they're taking over a planet, or they're spreading as well. So there is a risk reward of, okay, do I just send that unit in with one less mech whilst I'm, or do I keep everyone here? I start making this thing, spending all my resources here, let them spread and then go back with the extra guy, but they've spread more and they've become more powerful. By the way, in my head, I don't know if anyone else, they're not like just bipedal mechs. They're like four leg walkers, like big fucking tanks. And there's one of them could be just bipedal. One of them is like a flying one. Doesn't get affected by, you know, lava on the floor, can fly over certain things.
Fuck off. Fuck off with that.
Can the big ship, can the main ship also just be a massive mech that just flies through space?
Oh my god.
Pencil is
the mechs
sky.
Deploy
is
from
it? Can you get the Megazord and all your mechs join together to make one
it's the size,
giga mech?
It's the size and shape of a planet, and the Pentagon is where your mechs fly out from. The reason it's the size and shape of a planet is because that can then be the surface that you fight on when the aliens do attack the ship.
Yeah. And it's like, what's the Transformer called? I knew you said Omicron.
Omicron.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Omicron. No, what is it called? What's it called?
Orson. It's Orson Welles. That's the name of
the big planet transformer.
What? That's the. It's voiced by one of them. Is voiced by Orson Welles in the movie, right?
Unicron.
Unicron. Yeah. Close. Wow. All right. Look,
that's like the final.
Tom
final
fucking
hurrah.
Loves it.
Yeah,
James.
I love MexCom.
Yeah, MexCom. I think this is great. And does it turn out that it's a bit Starship Troopers and we're the baddies? Who knows?
I don't even care. Man, you know what? Even if that was some weird like underlying theme underneath all of it, that the settlements you're attacking are actually just civilizations trying to thrive in this solar system, I don't care. I am into it. I love it.
As am I. I think this is a great sounding game. Yeah. Nice one, Chris.
Well, it's not getting made. So.
Oh, someone else take this.
Maybe it is now, but you'll get none of the credit.
Yeah, Paradox will shit it out 3 years' time.
Paradox will fucking steal it.
Out of interest, have we actually developed this idea based on what you had on your thing? Or have we just rehashed what you've had?
No, there's been some major changes.
Oh my God. We're useful.
I haven't noted any of them down. If I want to ever make this, I should come back and listen to this.
I'm amazed. Sometimes I come out of these episodes and I'm like, we didn't actually develop anything here compared to the original pitch, but I feel like we've actually served a purpose. We've delivered. Well, Chris has delivered. I was so ready to come into this and be like, oh, that's a fucking shit idea.
That's what Chris I was expecting was going to happen. Sounds like a DLC to me. that's what I was expecting.
It's just a Planet Annihilation game mode.
That sounds more like a mechanic. Where's the mechanics?
The difference is here, we've had a pitch from an actual developer.
That means nothing.
Chris,
this is your job to come up with the games and make them. For me, if I have a bad pitch, I can fall back to my actual job.
That is true. If I have a bad pitch, no one buys it. I become homeless eventually.
Exactly. I'm okay.
Hopefully we can reach into your Trello board a couple more times in the future.
I'm looking at it now. There's some stuff on it.
All right, look, we have to go. We've massively run over because we're just so excited about just fucking mechs going nuts on each other.
Holy shit. But, welcome back to 2022.
MexCom Giga Mech Attack Force. Thank you for listening.
Oh, I like that.
to
Wait,
to
hang
this.
On. GMAF. That's okay. I was okay, really worried okay. It might have like
Mexcom fucks. Unbelievable.
Combat unit next territory.
Yes. No, I like that. If you like this, please let us know. Where can they let us know how they feel about this, Tom?
At Peach Please Pod without any vowels on Twitter. Or in the reviews or in the comments on this video if you're watching on YouTube, or send it to me via airplane smoke in the sky, smoke trails.
Please, smoke trails.
Over Bristol.
How we'll see them. And thank you everyone for listening. Until next time, goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye now.
I did like Mexcom cunt.
Combat unit next territory.